Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Mika Villas. We're getting close to the end of the year, and still we have lots of stuff to talk about. But first of all, how are you wonderful people doing this evening?
It is a slightly chilly December evening here in Georgia. But, you know, as you mentioned, it's getting close to the end of the year, but there's still a lot of wrestling to talk about, still a lot of exciting things to come before 2018 comes to a close. You know, big shows happened just, you know, this past week. Big shows are coming up. Let's, you know, I'm ready to dive in, man. Let's talk some wrestling.
I'm drinking sangria through a straw. About to talk wrestling. Life is good. Let's go.
Big shows indeed. However, no big show. Where did he go?
Who cares?
Yeah, nobody. I don't think anybody really cares. I don't think. I think you're the first person who asked that question. What happened
ever
to Big
in
Show?
Life?
Where'd he go? Yeah.
Like even his parents don't care.
Well, the one of them's dead, and then Big Boss Man dragged his casket around the neighborhood. So I don't know if his mom's there, but he's a big nasty bastard, and his mama said so. She definitely don't care. She gonna call him a big nasty bastard.
I forgot he was there. I forgot he showed up for like a couple segments and disappeared again until you mentioned him. And I think the last SmackDown and the Big Show's not here. And I was like, why would he be? I'm like, he was
part of the bar for like 3 weeks.
I fast forwarded through those 3 weeks, or at least I X'd him out. And that was a big X in the framework of my mind that made up the SmackDown Live watching, because again, the Big Show, he's one of those athletes that you want them to sit down someplace, go do the Goodwill ambassadorships, go, you know, shake hands, kiss kids, run for office, get a sports deal, do bad movies, do anything but show up on my television screen, please. Your time is over. I don't want to see you do a championship. There's nobody for you to pass the proverbial baton to. You are a entity that is over. There's nobody who's going to be on your level, your par. Even if they get somebody 7 feet tall, 450 pounds, we don't need to see you come and give them the proverbial nod saying, oh, I'm passing in this big giant show thing on. Sit down, go make something else instead of wrestling TV.
Knucklehead 2.
Now, I thought we were talking about Big Show, not Kane.
That was all show. I mean,
Kane's actually done all that. Yeah, he went out and he made another movie and he ran for office and he shakes hands and kisses babies. And I mean, he shook my hand, you know, a few weeks ago at WrestleCade. So he's out shaking hands. Definitely.
But I don't see him on my television anymore. I don't see him popping up. I mean, if he does, he throws on his mask. There is a beatdown that ensues for one time only, special attraction match, and he's gone. I don't care enough about the Big Show for it to be a special attraction match.
Well, you also saw him. You also saw Big Show getting in and out of the ring to try to help the bar, and you realize he doesn't need to be in the ring anymore. He seemed to be struggling just to like get in and out of the ring these days. Just as his body's breaking down, he's getting to be an older in the realm of professional wrestling. You know, his time has come and gone.
His time is up. Maybe he realized he wasn't up to the bar.
Who really is? Who really is? They're the SmackDown Tag Team Champions for a reason.
Let's go ahead and talk about WWE's TLC. Happened this past weekend in California. San Jose, if I remember correctly. And we got 12 matches. Two of them on the pre-show. So, as D-Generation would like to say, let's break it down. To open up the pre-show, the kickoff show, we had Buddy Murphy defeating Cedric Alexander to retain the WWE Cruiserweight Championship.
So, was this a shocker? Not really. They like Buddy Murphy, and Mustafa Ali has been getting a ton of attention. It took well over a month, if not more, for Cedric to get his mandatory rematch from losing the Cruiserweight title to Buddy Murphy in the first place. So in all that time, you had a lot of stuff happen in the Cruiserweight division. Mustafa Ali becoming more popular on the main roster, at least being advertised for matches coming up later. But Buddy Murphy is also somebody who they like. He's a product of the WWE system. He's a bigger Cruiserweight. They had nothing else to do with him. He's come back from injury. He looks good. He's everything that they want him to be. And to be honest, while it was great that Cedric had the belt, Cedric was never someone who I saw just in the Cruiserweight division. Like Ali now is on a main roster spot. Cedric is one of those athletes that you go, why are they just having him on the Cruiserweight division where he can match up against anybody on any other rosters, be it SmackDown or Raw? So their match, fantastic. That's one of the things about 205 Live. I can't say that I've seen a horrible, sleepy, tired match from any of those guys. They really go out and they work their butts off. So the match itself was fantastic, but the outcome was predictable in my book.
Well, it's early in Buddy Murphy's reign, you know, like you mentioned. I mean, he's somebody, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's only getting these opportunities because of the reasons they like him. The guy's killing it. The guy's been killing it since the rebirth of 205. Once Enzo left and they started the tournament to crown a new Cruiserweight champion, kind of the second coming of 205 Live. Buddy Murphy has been outstanding this entire year. So I expect a lengthy title run from him. And Cedric, they're kind of playing this thing where he's, since losing the belt, you know, he's doubting himself. And so that's why it took him a while to earn his shot. That was the whole gimmick, is that Drake Maverick said, you know, I don't think mentally you're ready. If I send you out there and give you the title shot this week, like, I don't think mentally you're prepared and you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna be at your best. So they did the story of him waiting to get it, and they gave it to him at a pay-per-view, even be it on a kickoff show, instead of just on, you know, one of the weekly 205 shows. But yeah, you know, maybe Cedric and Buddy continue, especially with Ali now seemingly going to SmackDown Live. That removes him from the title picture. But, you know, within, now that we're in this kind of McMahon era, you know, the McMahon family is back, bringing people up. Maybe Cedric now, you know, is one of those guys. Within the next couple of weeks, we see him pop onto Raw or SmackDown, quote unquote, full time, and leave the 205, leave the Cruiserweight division. You know, a lot to be seen, but fantastic match. I expected Buddy to retain, just because they built up him winning the title for so long. So I definitely did not expect him to lose it back so quickly. I mean, the big question now is who's the next challenger for Buddy Murphy? You know, does he continue fighting with Cedric, or, you know, does somebody else break out of the pack and move up to champ contendership?
I really enjoyed the match. I thought this match would definitely be a top contender for match of the night. And it was definitely a banger. I loved it. The Cruiserweight division, they never disappoint me. And these two guys, did not. You know, Cedric's one of the best pound-for-pound wrestlers in the world. Not just in the Cruiserweights, but heavyweights, any weight. He is amazing. And, of course, Buddy Murphy has been on a roll since he's returned. And I think that, man, he is great because as a heel champion with so many, you know, baby faces, to be able to go at him and have a great run is great. Because, you know, let's be honest, guys like Cedric and Ali are destined for much greater things. Not to say that 205 Live is not great. But, you know, it ain't Raw or SmackDown. So that's the promised land right there. But yeah, I love the match though, and Cedric and Buddy have great chemistry together. Great way to open the show. And again, they got a little over 10 minutes, but you know, great. I want to see him wrestle some more. Let's keep it going. And the next match, Elias defeating Bobby Lashley in a ladder match. I thought that the original stipulation was whoever got the guitar first was able to use it, but apparently was whoever got the guitar would win the match. So Elias got the guitar and he won the match.
Yeah, they made it seem as though the rule was going to be pinfall or submission. Was that you can get up and once you get the guitar you can use it. They kind of made it seem that the rules were one way, and then the rules kind of actually ended up being another way. But Elias basically in a 2-on-1 situation against both Lashley and the Leo man of the Rush. Hour, Leo Rush, the 23-year-old
piece of gold. He's 24 Rush. Now. He had a birthday.
He is 24. That's good. That's good. So he can be the 24-carat now.
Look at you giving gimmick ideas out. Yeah,
I know, right? So yeah, it was. I'm not a super huge fan of Lashley. Don't really care for Elias much. Leo Rush was the only interest for me in that matchup, and him running around doing crazy antics. Hit the Rush Hour. A lot of fun stuff there. I don't know where either guy goes after this. It's kind of. We did kind of see that they're at least continuing this for quite some time, at least until next week on our holiday episode
of Monday Night Raw. Yeah, the guitar thing, I thought it would be like most matches where you pull it down and then the match is over. I mean, you could use it or whatever, but I guess it kind of went back to that old school something on a pole match where you can pull it down off the pole and then, beat your opponent with it or whatever. As annoying as Leo Rush is, I love this role for him. Lashley, for me, has never been a great speaker. And even though he keeps patting his butt at people and showing off his glutes, I kind of like the feud with Elias. It's comedy. It's kind of entertaining. And it kills enough time to progress the show. It doesn't dip me down and make me not want to pay attention or make me want to take a bathroom break, which on paper, it really should. It should be one of those things like, oh, here comes this stupid stuff again. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. It's 2-on-1 and, Elias is a good talker and Leo Rush is showing himself to be a good enough talker to be continuously out there getting the mic.
Yeah, that's a good point. I definitely do think that Leo Rush does bring a lot of value to Lashley. Lashley feels like was missing something when he came back. Definitely has the skill, but can come off as a bland character when he talks sometimes. I believe that, use Leo Rush and to the full of his advantage. There's a reason why you have Drake Maverick with the Authors of Pain. Let's be honest, Leo Rush is a great wrestler, but how far is he going to get in the 205 Live division, right, with the Cruiserweights? Right now, I think they're trying to capitalize on him as much as they can, and let's use him, put him with Lashley. It's working. I think Lashley as a heel with a mouthpiece is great. The match was a match. The stipulation confused me. We didn't get a guitar break until the next day. So, yeah. Elias versus a babyface, much better. But it was just a match. So moving on, we get the Mixed Match Challenge Finals. The Fabulous Truth versus Mahalisha And the winners, of course, would get the 30th entrance on their prospective Royal Rumble matches at the 2019 Royal Rumble. And in this match, a little over 5 minutes to open the official card, Carmella and R-Truth are victorious as we predicted. And we not only got a dance break, but victory dance break. We got it all. We're going to get a lot more. And I'm sure a lot of fun skits with R-Truth and Carmella. And yeah, again, this match was solid. The guys and the girls did their thing, but it was supposed to be entertaining. And I think the people were happy with that and happy with the result.
Yeah, the crowd seemed into it, you know, especially right as soon as they came out dancing. They added the extra comedy stipulation of the winners also get an all-expense-paid trip to their chosen destination. Carmella was shocked to find out that R-Truth had decided to go to WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut, as opposed to an exotic location in Europe that she was kind of hoping for. I mean, I thought it was kind of, you know, silliness and I guess more silliness to come with this group, you know. I mean, they're both in their 30s, in that number 30, which I guess is the most important thing. But yes, there's probably a lot more comedy shenanigans with both of these as they look to enter and win their respective Royal Rumbles. We'll see where it goes from there. But I mean, the Mixed Match Challenge matches have all been kind of on the shorter side, even on the main Mixed Match Challenge. And we talked about the teams changing and these kind of things, people getting injured and what have you. So these were the only teams that actually started as teams all the way from the beginning. The Mixed Match Challenge is an interesting concept. I was hoping it would lead to, like, intergender type matches, but it seems that they're still keeping the mixed match, the women versus the women, the men versus the men. So we'll see, you know. But R-Truth, number 30 in the Royal Rumble, I'm waiting for a lot of hilarious shenanigans about him forgetting that he's number 30 and trying to come out early, possibly, you know, trying to put himself into qualifiers for the Royal Rumble, forgetting that he won and he's coming in at number 30. Like, you know, I think I expect a lot of silly shenanigans. It's R-Truth. And he's going to be silly. And this whole team is getting over, you know, he and Carmella in the dance break. So we'll see where it goes.
Let's go ahead now, move over to the triple threat tag team match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. I thought this match here with the Bar, defeating New Day and the Usos, was probably one of my favorite matches on the card. Of course, these three teams are three of the best tag teams in the entire WWE universe. At first, when I was thinking about it, okay, we've seen them wrestle over and over again, but man, they always find a way to make the matches feel different sometimes. The action's always great. This time with New Day, we had Kingston and Woods, no Big E in the match, which was, you know, different. But yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I thought that it was well executed. Everybody played great. And then Cesaro and Sheamus retaining. Sheamus, of course, did the bro kick to Xavier Woods to end it and escape with the SmackDown Tag Team Championships here. And as we saw on Tuesday, more tag teams are trying to get back in the fold. And there's, you know, there's a lot more fresh faces to throw at the Bar. But the Bar showing that they are truly the undisputed tag team champions and the best of the best, because they can be beat.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's it. They're, you know, I mean, the team started out with an amazing series of matches against each other, where they beat the ever-loving tar out of each other, and then they decided to form a team, and just outstanding. Love watching them. I mean, these three teams are great. They put on great series of matches against each other. I'm still not exactly sure what the Uso Penitentiary is. My guess earlier today was a seemingly never-ending series of matches against the Usos. That's the Uso Penitentiary. But with more teams coming into the SmackDown tag ranks or trying to make their presence known, maybe we don't see the same tag match every week. Despite it being exciting, I see where for the performers you want different competition, different levels of competition. So, you know, we saw the Sanity try to make their mark, Gallows and Anderson try to make their mark, in the SmackDown tag ranks. So hopefully that can lead to a lot of different and interesting new matchups. We'll see where that goes. But yeah, I mean, these guys always put on a fun matchup. The Usos are, the stalwarts of the tag division in WWE. They've never broken out and had singles runs. They've only been a tag team. They know what they're doing when it comes to that that ring. But the Bar are the dudes at the time. They are the guys to beat in SmackDown. And I don't know if anybody's going to beat them.
Who knows? I mean, we'll talk about this later, but, you know, we got teams coming. You know, we have more people coming from NXT. And there are so many teams on NXT that could definitely be difference makers. But, man, they definitely have their hands full right now. And let's not forget, the Bludgeon Brothers are still out there. You know, they're out with an injury right now. But, man, when those guys come back, you know, as JR like to say, business will be about to pick up.
Yeah, that you have more teams in the ranks, and you know, they mentioned Heavy Machinery would be coming up, but they didn't say what show they were coming to. Whether it be Raw or SmackDown, and you know, you have the War Raiders and the Street Profits and, you know, several other teams that could be coming up to SmackDown in the next few weeks or few months to spice up the division even further.
So then we move on to the tables, ladders, and chairs match between Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin. If Strowman won, he would get a championship match against Brock Lesnar at Royal Rumble. And Corbin would no longer be the acting general manager. If Corbin won, he would become the permanent general manager of Raw. Well, in this case, we had Strowman still on his link, could not wrestle. He's not cleared, as most people expected, but he did show up. And, well, since the match was tables, ladders, and chairs, anything goes. And a few people who had a bone to pick with Strowman came out. We had Apollo Crews, Raw Tag Team Champions, Gable and Rude, Finn Balor, and former general manager Kurt Angle. And so they came out, they all beat up Corbin for a while, and that allowed Strowman to just come in and pin him.
Just stand on him with one foot. And I was surprised that Braun was there, but I guess it would be out of character for him not to. But yeah, you having a half dozen guys kind of take some of their turns beating up Corbin. But you know, then we would see the next night with the McMahons coming in that things might have changed anyways. Had Corbin become permanent general manager of Raw, Vince McMahon might have come in the next night and removed him anyways. As Paige was removed, as general manager of SmackDown, they just said, oh, she'll still be around in a different role, was what Shane said. So the stipulation of that might have been negated by, Big Vinny Mac. But the match was short. It's what you wanted. The fans wanted to see Corbin get some comeuppance, and some of the wrestlers he's been harassing, including Heath Slater as referee, etc. And that's what you got. Still not sure how much longer Braun's going to be out. I think they were talking about him, you know, possibly taking on Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at the Royal Rumble. I'm not sure what exactly the timetable is on his injury. But they were already kind of talking about that on TLC, that he would be taking on Brock Lesnar.
I think that the match will happen at the Rumble. I think that there is still time for him to recover. I think he was close, but not yet ready for this match in December. But I think that by Royal Rumble, you get another month and a week, maybe, I believe. So plenty of time for him to recover. He just needed a little bit extra time. TLC was too close for him to get back. Lesnar versus Strowman at Royal Rumble, I think will happen unless something with Strowman's recovery, you know, digresses. But otherwise, the match should happen, no problem. Corbin going away as a general manager, love it. He's annoying, can't stand him. So I love that he's no longer in power, and you know the exclamation point of that was put on Monday night as he got beat up again by Kurt Angle and company. So it was fun to watch. Braun Strowman though victorious here, shenanigans, but it's what needed to happen to protect the monster amongst men. That we move on to tables match between Natalya and Ruby Riott. Of course, she was there with Liv Morgan, Sarah Logan, the Riott Squad. And this was a personal match with, you know, Jim D'Anvil Nightheart being brought into the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially a 3-on-1. And especially in a tables match where there's, you know, no disqualifications. Some people were critical of them bringing in Jim the Anvil Neidhart's death, you know, as part of the storyline. But we talked about it last week. You know, I assume that Natalya is fine with it. I assume that the rest of Jim's, you know, family is fine with it and are probably happy and proud that he's still able to have an influence in professional wrestling, even though he's passed. It helps keep his memory alive. And of course, Natalya winning was a very, very feel-good moment. You know, she essentially beat all three members of the Riott Squad, putting both Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan through tables before she would put Ruby Riott through the table with Ruby Riott's image on it, the table with her name on it, essentially, so to speak. I want to give a special shout-out to Liv Morgan for taking the wild, crazy bump. You know, being knocked off the apron and falling to the table. Liv, it was a little crazy, you know, but she took the bump and it looked nuts. She was okay. Apparently, you know, Liv is a tough little cookie, apparently, you know, but Natty getting a very, very feel good win. The match itself was fine. It was okay. It was pretty good, you know, at times. I definitely think Ruby Riott is, as far as in-ring wise, one of the best on the roster. Natalya, of course, is, you know, 10-year plus veteran of WWE. So she always delivers in her matches, whatever role they put her in, babyface, heel, comedy, whatever, she's there. And she'll deliver quality matches. What's next for the Riott Squad remains to be seen. You know, Natty the next night would win a gauntlet match and earn herself a championship match on Christmas Eve against Ronda Rousey. So, you know, apparently Natty moving on to bigger things, battling one of her friends, the Riott Squad. We'll see what's next for them.
Definitely, I thought that the match worked. Natalya getting her hand raised in victory, tribute to her late father, Jim D'Anvil Neidhart, and of course, yeah, like you said, Morgan taking that powerbomb onto the table, Logan too. I mean, all three of them, tough cookies, but they did the job. Natalya was victorious. It was another fun match. And like you said, now Natalya wins the number one contendership for the Raw Women's title. And, best friends will collide. I think eventually that could lead to a Natalya heel turn. They could have a very good story, going from here until WrestleMania as a buffer for Ronda. Ronda, of course, right now, maybe looking at a potential match against the Man at WrestleMania. But, she has stuff to do between now and then. And who better than Natalya? They can have a pretty good set of matches. And have another match, the Rumble. And, Ronda Rousey's a full-time employee. She's no part-timer. She's in it for the long haul. So she's expected to be at all shows and to work all the pay-per-views. And so far, she's done it. And kudos to her, doing a great job leading the women on Monday Night Raw.
Well, so you mentioned that Ronda looking for things to do, though. With the McMahons coming in, is it possible we see, NXT call-ups? We already saw Nikki Cross being announced and Lacey Evans being announced. Is it possible the McMahons start shifting people from Raw to SmackDown and SmackDown to Raw, to create new challengers, new matchups, etc., the things they were talking about? So maybe Natalya, as a friend of Ronda, in the past, maybe they just have the one match and then Ronda moves on to something else. I don't know if they would do a full longer-term program between them.
They could, but at this point, with three more shows before WrestleMania 35, so I believe they're having shows February and March between the Rumble and WrestleMania. I could see them bring another big program, but I think that they have a good long-term program with Natalya, especially if she turns heel. I think you can go ahead and do that now and get that through until Mania, and so then Raji can focus on the Man.
You just did a big feel-good story about Natty and her dad. I don't think now's the time to turn her heel.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying. The program could be long, right? So they can have a match, and then they can have a little bit of animosity, and they'll be good. And then, in a couple of months, maybe they wrestle in a tag match or something at the Royal Rumble, and that's when Natty turns or whatever. And eventually, then they can have another match. And you got to give her something to do, Rousey, without affecting the possibility, the Lynch match. That's the money match. You want to save that for WrestleMania, but you need her to do something before then. I think Natalya is the thing that she can do, and they can work for a few months leading to WrestleMania. So moving on, we get Finn Balor versus Drew McIntyre in a singles match, no stipulation. Finn Balor wins this match, a pretty good match where Drew McIntyre gave Balor a beating. But of course, Dolph Ziggler came out of nowhere to interfere, cost McIntyre the match, so Balor is victorious. Pretty good match here. I liked it. And McIntyre, even in defeat, continues to shine. He is going to have some WWE gold in 2019.
Yeah. I mean, we're both long-term fans of McIntyre and, his work on the independent scene before returning back to WWE and NXT. He was beating on Balor like Balor owed him money. I mean, you could see after only a handful of those chops how torn up Balor's chest already was. Fun match between these two. Both of these guys are great. Dolph comes in to keep that program running, I assume. We keep Dolph versus McIntyre going for a little bit longer. Balor gets the win. I assume Balor will be moving back up into title contention, shortly. you know, he's kind of floating here. It's kind of a three-way feud, kind of not. So maybe we get that at Royal Rumble between these three guys. It devolves into a three-way feud. Balor versus Dolph versus McIntyre, which I would be okay with. All three are fantastic in ring competitors. You know, put on great matches, and I think they could put on a great match in trios or in various singles matches. But McIntyre takes a loss, you know. I mean, he took the big loss there. But I don't think he ended up losing a lot from it. You know, it's not like it's a devastating loss to somebody who's beneath him. So McIntyre looks to be, you know, moving up in the ranks, like you said, championship gold, hopefully in his future. They'd be crazy not to. You know, Vince McMahon long ago announced him as the chosen one and a future world champion, and he has yet to be the world champion in WWE. You know, you got to give Vince his prophecy before Vince stops coming around at WWE events. So with Vince on TV off and on, I think that would be perfect time to give Drew a big opportunity at a championship match, and you know, Vince McMahon can relive that story as the chosen one and give him the belt and, you know, all these things.
So moving on, we had Rey Mysterio defeat Randy Orton in a chairs match. This match, I thought, was fine, solid, everything we expect to be, just two pros doing their thing. At the end, Mysterio, gets the win out of nowhere before Orton got the chance to inflict a lot of chair pain on Rey Mysterio. But yeah, I thought that the match was all right. Nothing wowed me, but you know, basically it was everything I thought it would be. I wasn't expecting these two guys to you know, be 2005 Rey and Randy here, blow me away. They're great wrestlers, even in 2018, don't get me wrong, but you know, maybe a couple of steps slower.
Yeah, but the chair stipulation, I think, helped kind of play into that too.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the Orton thing being sadistic and all this.
Yeah, they could slow it down, be a little methodical, beating up with the chairs, selling. But yeah, Randy was setting up for something nefarious and devastating, and Rey catches him off guard and pins him. Rey gets the big win. And you know, keeps his win going, but with Orton getting kind of caught off guard, it leaves it open for this feud to possibly continue if they want to. So we'll see how that happens. You know, if they decide to keep this going or not, but you know, Rey looked good, Orton looked good. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, nothing, a good match, but not a great match.
All right, so then we get Raw Women's Championship match. Ronda Rousey defeats Nia Jax. This match was basically everything was supposed to be, with Ronda overcoming Nia Jax, who, you know, of course, is this monster that took Becky Lynch out and is destroying all the competition, the Indestructible Force. And, you know, Rousey, somebody who had been dominated at the last show, Survivor Series, by Charlotte Flair. Now, you know, was she going to be able to overcome Nia Jax? Of course, Nia Jax with Tamina in her corner. But yeah, Rousey did everything she was supposed to do. Looked great offensively and also in her selling, and overcoming Nia Jax, retaining the Raw Women's Championship. I liked it. And if anyone other than, and I know the year's not over, but if anyone other than Ronda Rousey wins Rookie of the Year, it would be a travesty.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of talked to you guys after, you know, on our chat this week, as we kind of have our ongoing talks, that I felt Ronda was sloppy, but in the best way possible, because it makes it with her combined with her selling and her execution of moves, it makes the match feel more like a scramble, more like an actual fight than a choreographed series of moves. So with, you know, and it, I mean, it may be agenting, it may be, you know, coaches that she has helping her get better with wrestling, but they're playing to her strengths. And she makes these matches, you know, seem really fun and exciting. You know, and Nia carried her part, but yet again, Nia is somebody you depends on who she's in the ring with, depends whether she's going to have a really good match or not. As she's still, you know, only a few years into the wrestling industry herself, a good match, interesting match. But yeah, I'm pretty much with you that if, you know, Ronda Rousey was, of course, the number one in the PWI female 100 list, you know, because it's done within the kayfabe sense of, you know, she had big matches, she won a championship, her win-loss record, etc. So for those exact same reasons, if she's not considered Rookie of the Year in the kayfabe sense, then people aren't looking at the list properly. Basically, that's, you know, I mean, because you look at within the time of what she's done from WrestleMania to WrestleMania, or not even WrestleMania, you know, she's hasn't even wrestled the entirety of the year. But you know, she's made impact. She's brought in viewers. You know, it's brought attention to Raw, to the women's division. She's had interesting matches with a variety of different opponents. And she's the Raw Women's Champion. And, you know, still the question keeps coming up, who's going to be the one to beat her? Is it going to be, you know, does she lose the title somehow with a distraction and it sets up a match with her and Becky Lynch that is not involving any titles? You know, the rumored match at one time was the Four Horsewomen versus the Four Horsewomen of NXT. You know, not sure if that's going to happen because I think there's more money in just a Ronda and a Becky match than there is a 4-on-4. Unless you do it like a 4-on-4 elimination and it comes down to Ronda and Becky, you know, as the leaders of their respective teams. But that's pretty much that's the money match with, you know, with Becky main eventing tables, ladders, and chairs. I could easily see Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch possibly main eventing, if not being, you know, I mean, they're definitely going to be a main event of WrestleMania, but I don't know if they would be the last match of the night or not. I still think that would probably be reserved for the Universal Championship match. You know, Ronda's putting on some good stuff, and I'm really, really excited to see what else she has, you know, new competitors coming in. You know, I mean, it seems that they're, that she's kind of feuding with Charlotte as well, so there may be another return match or a series of matches with her and Charlotte before the big blow-off with Ronda and Becky. I mean, that's some of the hottest stuff that's going on in wrestling right now is Becky Lynch and Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey. So excited to see where every little ounce of anything that happens to build between these two. They are doing such a good job.
Definitely, I agree, and with everything 100%. There, and you know what? I think that both matches can happen. I don't think that you can do one match and give up the other. There's plenty of time to get the 4-on-4 horsewomen match. You can say that even for a Survivor Series, let's say, you know, great opportunity to do it then. You still have the women on NXT. You still have Baszler with the championship, and of course Shafir and Duke, who are continuing to work on their game. So there's no rush for that match. You can do Ronda versus Becky now. Is the match to make the hottest match coming into Survivor Series, if we remember correctly, and right now, the men is the hottest thing going on SmackDown Live. So I think that you can do one, and you can do the other one much later, and you know you're gonna have Ronda for a few more years at the very least, so you don't have to be concerned about getting something done right away. And you know they probably will be some shuffling in rosters to make that happen as well. You know, you got to get all the Four Horsewomen for on the proper brands. You know, if they like to continue to do Raw versus SmackDown, if they decide to go that route. So we'll see. Next up, we get the new Daniel Bryan defending his WWE Championship against AJ Styles. This was the longest match of the night. And I'm so glad because these two once again tore the house down. Fantastic match. I feel like every match I've seen with the two of them has been different, has felt fresh, and has been awesome. This was my match of the night, and I love the new Daniel Bryan. You know, the Yes Movement is dead, and Daniel Bryan trying to prove that Styles is not in his league. The new attitude for Daniel Bryan, I like it. He's doing a great job as champion. And AJ looks great as well. He continues to go out there and just steal the show. And these two do it every single time. This time was no exception. The new Daniel Bryan retains the championship, continues on his quest for a better SmackDown Live as the reigning champion.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, these guys are two of the best, you know, in-ring competitors of our generation. And they've been putting on great matches against each other the last several weeks. I mean, this one, they got a good bit more time. You know, Daniel Bryan's adapting more and more of, you know, the fact of some of the things that we've seen him do. You know, as his American Dragon days, you know, prior to signing with WWE, you know, the admonishing the ref, I've got till five, and ultimately winning with the small package, which was one of his many signature maneuvers during his Ring of Honor championship reign. So, you know, it's interesting to see him bring that back, but, you know, it's with a win like that in this type of feud that has gotten to a personal level. I don't think we've seen the last of them, thankfully. You know, we haven't seen the last of them this week. We got a mixed, you know, a tag team match where AJ and Daniel were on opposite sides of the ring from each other. So, as long as they stay on the same brand, I definitely see these guys continuing to have interesting matches and exciting matches. The new Daniel Bryan, I like his in-ring stuff. You know, he's getting interesting with his promos, and it's an interesting take. You know, it's what CJ Parker was trying to do a few years ago in NXT before he left and became our guy Juice and made the splash that he's making in New Japan. But you know, he's like the angry hippie. He's talking about, you know, your carbon footprint, and he's admonishing you for not doing your part. You know, he's yelling at the crowd for being wasteful and for being over consumers and, you know, and eating meat and, you know, these kind of things. Interesting take on it. You know, I mean, it gets the heat in the live crowds, but people still love to see the guy wrestle because he is a fantastic wrestler. So you can call them. You can call the people all the names you want, but they're still going to kind of love to hate you. You know, they're doing the, you know, he's changed the Yes Movement's dead. So, you know, but people are chanting kind of yes and no at him to kind of, to heckle him. But I, you know, who lies up for the next challenger? If AJ is kind of done, you know, they mentioned that Shane McMahon was taking away the, contractually obligated rematches for champions when they lose their belts. That's why AJ didn't get his rematch right away, and he won't get another rematch until he earns it. So who are the next challengers for for Daniel Bryan as SmackDown possibly gets a little bit more shaken up. No matter who it is, Daniel's going to put a good match on with him. He's that good that he can take good wrestlers and bring them to great matches. I'm interested and excited to see where the new Daniel Bryan takes SmackDown.
It's kind of crazy, Daniel Bryan coming back as, from the injury and telling everyone to believe in your dreams, never give up, overcoming, being told that he would never wrestle again, and changes things up and makes his character fresh again. And yeah, he goes from defeating a no one in Mustafa Ali the week prior, defeating AJ Styles, and then in tag team action, we got a few days ago, as you alluded, Daniel Bryan and Andrade Cien Almas versus AJ Styles and Mustafa Ali, and Mustafa Ali defeated Daniel Bryan as he not only hit his finisher but then pinned the WWE champion. And to me, I thought that was huge. Not only that, but they introduced Mustafa Lee as the newest member of the SmackDown Live roster, which makes me believe that the Cruiserweights are no longer Raw exclusive as they've been in the past. And now both brands will have members of 205 Live on their shows, which is great. But I thought, look, we looked at Mustafa Ali to get away from the match for a moment. Mustafa Ali, who a few years ago was ready to retire, be done with pro wrestling, and how the last few years have, gone as more different than he thought they would. He thought he was going to be gone and done. He gave it one more shot, and it has brought him to not only a WrestleMania moment, but also defeating the WWE champion. It's huge. And, man, in a land of giants, for the quote-unquote smaller guys to be shining like this, it's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, no, and it's really cool. I really enjoy Mustafa, and I have enjoyed his run on 205. Interested to see where he goes and continues to do on SmackDown. He did have the really good competitive match against Daniel, singles match, and then this current week, he was in a tag match, hit the 054. Dropping a knee on Daniel in the process, but seemingly Daniel's okay. He kind of, instead of making it a splash, seemed that his knee kind of caught Daniel in the chest. But I haven't heard anything, so I assume Daniel's okay, thankfully. But interesting to see where Mustafa goes now that he's part of SmackDown. And yeah, I guess if the Cruiserweights decide to, they can be called or drafted to either Raw or SmackDown now, instead of just, like you mentioned, being purely kind of Raw's, being Raw talent only. Interesting to see where people start popping up and what roles they fill into once they do pop up. Onto the different shows.
So moving on, we go on to singles match for the Intercontinental Championships. We did think it was odd that there was no stipulation for this. Seth Rollins defending the Intercontinental Championship against Dean Ambrose. And as I predicted, Dean Ambrose wins the Intercontinental Championship. It was a good move to be made. Ambrose will be a great heel champion, and this is far from over between Rollins and Ambrose.
Yeah, I mean, as long as these guys are on the same show, they're always going to be feuding. I think that's the thing. So Ambrose wins. The match was fine, but you know, it just kind of felt flat. There were a lot of times that they seemed to lose the crowd. And I don't know if following AJ and Brian made it difficult for them. I don't know if just kind of the lack of stipulation, despite the fact that we had seen these guys in the past in all kinds of crazy stipulations against each other, and then getting a standard rules match for the Intercontinental Championship was a little disappointing to some people. But yeah, they kind of, there were parts where the crowd seemed to kind of turn against them a little bit, but towards the end they won them back. And yeah, Ambrose getting the win, new Intercontinental Champion. I think now you have either you give these guys one or two more matches, but then I think you gotta split them up. I think you gotta put them on different shows so that you don't burn through it. Because in theory, this hatred is supposed to be so deep that they can't coexist on the same show. You know, so they're either going to be fighting each other as long as they're on the same show. So I think, you know, with Dean winning the Intercontinental Championship, maybe now Seth moves to SmackDown. You know, we see some matches with Seth versus AJ, Seth versus Andrade, you know, Seth versus Bryan for the WWE Championship. You know, while Ambrose continues to reign terror with his heel persona, and Bane-like jackets on Monday Night Raw. But I do feel it was kind of an odd place for the matchup on the card. I get it, it's a long time feud, but it just seemed the crowd was, I don't know if they were getting restless, they've been there a while, or what exactly it was, but it seemed like it was a hard spot for them. But they, you know, they still put on a good match, a really good match, as these guys do. But I think it is time to put some distance between them, and that distance has to come in the form of opposing shows.
I'm sure at some point we will see that, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. And I definitely think that there will be changes coming up, but these two are going to fight for a while, in my opinion, and it's going to get, what's the word I'm looking for? It's going to get nastier before it gets nicer. These two friends, of course, now are becoming bitter enemies. And for now, I like it. But yes, a change of pace eventually would be nice. All right, so in your main event, we have Becky Lynch, the man, defending her SmackDown Women's Championship in a triple threat TLC match in your main event of the evening, as I already said, versus Charlotte Flair and Asuka. And man, they used, you know, every table, ladder, and chair that they could, beat the crap out of each other. And just when we thought we would have a winner, out comes the rowdy one and takes down both Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. And then Asuka takes advantage, wins the SmackDown Women's Championship for the first time.
I mean, it was a wild match. As you mentioned, they kind of used everything they could. You know, we saw them put each other through tables. Becky putting Charlotte through one of the commentator tables. It looked as though it may have been intended to be a leg drop or a senton, but became basically a seated senton, and she sat on Charlotte's midsection. Kudos to Charlotte for being able to power through and continue. You know, Charlotte eventually would spear Asuka through the barricade wall. You know, Charlotte would put Becky through a table. It was wild, wild, but fantastic match, fantastic storytelling. Yeah, Ronda literally marches down to the ring, pushes a ladder with Charlotte and Becky over. They both fall down. Ronda turns around and walks away. Asuka slides back in the ring, clear, wide open, wins it. Fantastic moment for Asuka, finally winning women's championship on the main roster. You know, she won, you know, the held had her undefeated streak and won the, you know, first season of the Mixed Match Challenge with The Miz. You know, she won the first ever Women's Royal Rumble and, you know, but lost to Charlotte at last year's WrestleMania. But now she stands atop the SmackDown Women's Division as champion, albeit the assist to Ronda Rousey. Mind you, Ronda Rousey stealing the thunder from two of Asuka's biggest moments. The first one was after Asuka won the Royal Rumble. You know, Ronda comes out to try to shake her hand, and Asuka slaps her hand away. Now, the competition for what was the bigger moment? Was the bigger moment Asuka winning the championship, or was it Ronda interfering and eliminating Charlotte and Becky Lynch? You know, so I could see planting seeds for what will be further down the line, I presume, but a championship match between, some kind of match between Ronda Rousey and Asuka. I don't know if Ronda's ready for Asuka. To be honest, I think Asuka could murder her.
I mean, is anyone ever ready for Asuka?
That's the question. It's the big question, and I don't know if they're. I don't know who is. Especially with, you know, if Becky and Charlotte are now have their sights set on Ronda and each other. You know, that leaves them distracted. So if they do get in the ring one-on-one with Asuka, they may not have their full attention on winning that match against her, and Asuka could beat both of those women, you know, in singles competition or in another triple threat of some kind. We'll really see. But, you know, the man loses the championship without losing really a whole lot of steam, but it keeps the animosity and the, you know, going between her and Ronda Rousey, as the war of trash talking has still continued. And as we build to this, you know, supposed the big dream match in wrestling right now, you know, Ronda versus Becky.
Yeah. So overall, this show was really good. I was happy with how it flowed. The fans in the arena, I mean, I have loved everything. I mean, I have been excited for the whole show, but I loved the flow of the show and the matches, and I really like this. So if I had to give this show a grade, I'll give it a B+. I just think they definitely delivered. It was very good, not great, but, you know, it tried its hardest. So, B+ for me.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it throughout. Yeah, like you mentioned, I felt it had a good flow to it. You know, there wasn't really a match that was not at least to some extent enjoyable. So I think a B+ is pretty good. You know, the show throughout kept me entertained. There wasn't any long, drawn-out sketches or talk segments or any matches that I was just like, oh, okay, time to get up and go to the bathroom. You know, this is terrible. But it was a really good, enjoyable show. That, you know, it didn't feel as long as it could have felt with as many matches that were on the card. Everything just kind of had a smooth flow to it. Ended a great moment with Asuka finally winning a championship. You know, and it sets up for future storylines. And then, of course, the return of Vinnie Mac on Monday to save Monday Night Raw from the ratings monster.
Alright, so moving on, let's really take a look and see what's going on in Japan. Of course, the World Tag League just finished, it wrapped up, and start setting things up for Wrestle Kingdom. And Los Ingobernables de Japón, Sanada and Evil defeated the Guerrillas of Destiny in the finals of the World Tag League. Well, we'll get that rematch. But alas, not so quite, because at the end of the show, out came the Young Bucks, who inserted themselves in this match. So, well, it's going to be a triple threat match. But not only that, Kota Ibushi defeated Goto to win the NEVER Open Weight Championship. And Will Ospreay came back to New Japan and defeated Taichi to become the number one contender officially. So, we got that match official. So, here are the 10 matches that are announced for Wrestle Kingdom 13 on January 4th. In the pre-show, a gauntlet match to determine the number one contenders to the NEVER Open Weight 6-Man Tag Team Championships. You have Michael Elgin, Jeff Cobb, and Dave Finley versus The Elite, Hangman Page, Yujiro Takahashi, and Marty Scurll, Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Beretta, and Chuck Taylor versus Suzuki Guns, Minoru Suzuki, and the Killer Elite Squad versus Reisuke Taguchi and Makabe and Toriano. Then on the main card, Kota Ibushi will be defending the NEVER Open Weight Championship versus Will Ospreay. Suzuki Guns, Kanemaru, and El Desperado will be defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championships versus Roppongi 3K and Los Ingobernables de Japón, Bushi and Takagi. Tomohiro Ishii will be defending the British Heavyweight Championship versus Zack Sabre Jr. The Guerrillas of Destiny will be defending the IWGP Tag Team Championships versus Sanada and Evil and the Young Bucks. Cody Rhodes will be defending the United States Championship versus Juice Robinson. Kushida will be defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Taiji Ishimori. Okada will be wrestling against Jay White in a grudge match. Chris Jericho will be defending the IWGP Intercontinental Championship against Tetsuya Naito. And Kenny Omega will be defending the IWGP Heavyweight Championship versus Hiroshi Tanahashi in your main event of that evening.
I mean, that's a lot of hot matches there, man. It, you know, any number of them could be the show type stealers. I mean, realistically, any of these matches could be match of the year candidates. You know, a couple are return matches, you know, matches we've seen in different capacities. You know, but, and then of course with the speculation that there may be an exodus of a handful of superstars, you know, come probably after New Year's Dash, as is customary. They have their they have the big Wrestle Kingdom match, then they somehow get written out of storylines on New Year's Dash. But you know, with the speculation of who's staying and who's going, I think that makes some of the matches predictable, not predictable. You know, I mean, Cody's speculated to not be continuing with them, so it makes you think, okay, well, maybe Juice is going to beat him for the U.S. Championship, and well, maybe the Young Bucks aren't going to win the IWGP Tag Team Championship. But nothing's been confirmed yet. Nothing's 100%. To me, the big match, you know, is the long story match, and that's Okada versus Jay White, the only match on the main card not for a championship. But you know, that's the big hot storyline matchup that's been brewing for a long time. Finally get those guys one-on-one. The Switchblade versus the Rainmaker, that to me is my big money match. You know, I know that a lot of these matches are going to deliver. You know, Chris Jericho versus Naito has been brewing for a while. Tanahashi, you know, won the G1 Climax, so he gets his shot at Kenny Omega. These two will probably have a fantastic match, as they have in the past when they've met one-on-one. It's January 4th, and it's always a really good show, even if it does tend to be a long show, as it can be, especially when you add in the gauntlet match for the pre-show. But it's a special time of year. It's Wrestle Kingdom in the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, man, this is a stacked card. Possibly one of the most stacked Wrestle Kingdoms cards in the last few years. So many matches that could be match of the night. It's gonna be a hot night / morning for everyone watching live. As New Japan Pro Wrestling, it could be the last time we see a few of these guys on this lineup, and you know, it's kind of like awakening, you know, for people. It's like, hey, you know, you thought you had it good, but you know, nothing is forever. But some guys, you know, leave. Some new guys will come in. A lot of ice is gonna be on the New Year's Dash show as well. You gotta remember a big show the day after Wrestle Kingdom, as storylines wrap up and we start moving forward to the future. For New Japan, this is going to be a very crucial year. They continue to make more headway into the United States, as they announced they're coming back to the U.S. in February, doing two shows, one in California and one in North Carolina. So, you know, it's a very important Wrestle Kingdom show, and a lot of great matches. I've got to see a lot of great matches already this year from New Japan, but this definitely one of the better cards on paper. Definitely will deliver. I can't wait. We'll be breaking it down in more details in the next week or so. But I can't wait for the show. Whether I watch it live or not, that's still TBD. But regardless, I can't wait. So, lastly, I know that we didn't talk about this, but because I totally forgot, or it just wasn't even on my brain, but ROH, speaking of finales and things that will change, had their annual final battle show, and here are the results. Kenny King defeated Eli Isom. Jeff Cobb defeated Adam Page to retain the television championship. Kelly Klein defeated Madison Rain, Karen Q, and Sumi Sakai to win the Women of Honor championship. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated John Gresham. Matt Taven defeated Dalton Castle. Marty Scurll defeated Christopher Daniels to become the number one contender, to still remain the number one contender for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Flip Gordon defeated Bully Ray in an I Quit match, where we get to see a cameo appearance by none other than the Sandman. Jay Lethal defeated Cody Rhodes to retain the Ring of Honor World Championship. And the Briscoes defeated the Young Bucks and SoCal Uncensored in a Ladder Wars match to win the World Tag Team Championships. Of course, for anyone that's ever seen a Ladder Wars match, this one, I believe, being the ninth one, it is crazy, as crazy can be. And of course, when you have the Briscoes and the Bucks and Ladders, you can expect a lot of fun times that did not disappoint. So Cullen censored the word there. That's about it. But yeah, this signaling another possibly end of an era, as looks like the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, and Adam Page are done with Ring of Honor. They seem to have had their swan song and their curtain call the next night at the tapings. But a few thoughts first, Danny. Kelly Klein wins the championship that I thought she should have won at Supercard of Honor.
Well, yeah, Kelly Klein, you know, finally winning the Women of Honor Championship. She's only the second person to hold that. Sumi Sakai was the inaugural winner, and held that title for, you know, for many, many months, putting away a lot of different challengers, including Kelly in a singles match. But Kelly Klein looking, you know, I mean, she looked very, very, very strong against all three competitors, before winning, finally winning the Women of Honor Championship. You know, really good match. Kelly Klein is an outstanding competitor. You know, happy to see her get the championship. You know, she had been held as the gatekeeper for so long because she was kind of there, you know, but not at the top. So now that she has the championship, you know, she is the top woman in Women of Honor. You know, now the question becomes, of course, whenever somebody wins, who's the next challenger? Who could possibly dethrone Kelly Klein now that she has the championship it took her so long to win? I think we're in for another long title reign. You know, Sumi Sakai held the belt for many months, and I think Kelly intends to do the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. Marty Scurll, the only elite member that seems to be sticking with Ring of Honor.
I mean, he debuted a new faction the next night. You know, Villain Enterprises. So it's not just that he's just sticking around for a few more matches. You know, he brought in PCO and Brody King as Villain Enterprises, and Marty has his eyes set on the world, you know, on Jay Lethal and the World Championship. A little interesting. Yet again, it was kind of speculated that all the elite would be leaving Ring of Honor, but Marty decided, you know, let those guys take some time off. Let me have a run at the top, and I guess see where things go.
So the villain sticking in the Ring of Honor, Zack Sabre Jr., John Gresham put on a clinic. Zack Sabre Jr., top 10 wrestler of the year, always a great guy, a fantastic wrestler. Out here with Gresham, they did the thing. Will we see more Zack Sabre Jr. in a Ring of Honor?
I mean, I guess that remains to be seen with what his schedule allows. You know, does he, you know, I mean, he's still dividing his time between the United States and Japan, and still making sporadic appearances in his home country of England. I don't know what the future for Zack Sabre and Ring of Honor is. I don't think it's done, but I don't know if he becomes a regular kind of full-time roster member, you know, over the next few months. I think we may just see him a couple more times here and there. Tenth time they've held the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles. They are Ring of Honor. Well, you know, I mean, with the Bucks leaving and SoCal Uncensored, we're not really sure. There was kind of also, it seemed, that a swan song possibly for Christopher Daniels, you know, losing to Marty Scurll, that maybe Daniels maybe now taking his, you know, kind of retiring from in-ring competition. I don't know if Frankie and Scorpio Sky are going to stick together as SoCal Uncensored's a team. You know, I think if you take those two teams out and you just leave the Briscoes, it kind of leaves what other tag teams are there in Ring of Honor? You know, I mean, you have I guess you have Malonis and Beer City Bruiser as the bouncers, you know, possibly the Briscoes against them. You know, if you have Villain Enterprises, if Marty's going to be going for the world championship, then possibly PCO and Brody King start looking for tag team gold. You know, but as far as I don't know what else, I mean, there is for the Briscoes. It's kind of, I mean, they are ROH. They really are. You know, they're the day one guys. They've done, you know, I mean, Jay has been a two-time Ring of Honor world champion. And now he and Mark are 10-time tag team champions. It's kind of gets to the point like, well, what do you do with them? I guess they have to build up a division for the Briscoes to fight against. You know, they need to start. Look, I guess they got to start looking for teams to bring in and build up, or bring in some outside teams from other promotions to come in and challenge the Briscoes. But I mean, the Briscoes have kind of beaten down anybody who's there and who's been there. The Briscoes have put the hurting on them.
That's definitely a lot of questions that need to be answered. What's going to happen now? ROH, you know, in the state of elite less, what are they going to do? Are they going to be more New Japan Pro Wrestling dependent? Of course, we know that they have this big sold out card at Madison Square Garden with New Japan Pro Wrestling. What's going to happen after that? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered, but this may be something that brings more new talent to Ring of Honor that is not elite, is not New Japan Pro Wrestling. There's a lot of great talent that do deserve a shot, and if WWE is not taking some of these guys, definitely Ring of Honor should take a look at them. But, man, I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have to just wait and find out. So, with that being said, it is it for our show tonight. Thank you for listening. We appreciate every single one of you. So, please subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. Check us out on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F Danger. Mika Villas is at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And from our FOW family to yours, want to wish everyone happy holidays. Be merry, be well, be happy, and as always, keep watching wrestling.